It's 8:29 in the morning, WCFR time, the Heather and Ray Show, and we've been talking about this one for about a week, and we've been playing Freddie Cannon songs this morning, mixing it in with our remembrances of 9/11, and I want to tell you, it's a personal thrill for both of us.
Yes.
To be joined on the phone by the man himself, Mr. Freddie Cannon. Good morning, Freddie.
Good morning, Ray. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Great, great. Early here, but I'm doing good.
Yeah, I said at the beginning of our show we were giving you your personal wake-up call.
Yeah, this is it.
We should point out.
All right.
We should point out to folks who aren't aware of it that are born in Massachusetts but now living in California.
Right, I live in Los Angeles, just up the suburbs of Los Angeles,
wow.
San Fernando Valley.
Yeah, yep. It's a great area.
Oh, it's nice out here, but it's been hot. We've had a hot spell, you know. I miss a lot of things back in New England, so, you know, my wife does too. We both miss a lot of different, you know. When you grow, your roots are there. You miss things that you don't have here, you know.
Yep, absolutely right.
And it's so when I talk to people back there, like even like you two guys this morning, it makes me feel like I'm already home back there again.
That's nice.
And it's nice to hear that you still have a bit of the accent, Freddie.
Oh, I still have that. I'm born in Lynn, but grew up in Revere. So I think everybody from that Revere, Massachusetts area has this dominant accent.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about this song. What was the reason behind it? I mean, obviously, folks know that you've been a lifelong Red Sox fan, and having grown up, as you said, in the Lynn Revere area, big Boston, my hometown, which we just played a few moments ago. What caused you to get the song going?
Well, you know, it's a little story behind this whole thing, and if you don't mind, I'll tell you this story.
Go right ahead.
Well, I started. I wanted to do something because I did some little research and found out that the Yankees, which we all don't really like being fans, you know, they have 5 personal songs that people have written for them. The Red Sox have none.
Right.
Oh. All the Red Sox play other people's songs in Fenway Park. They use Neil Diamond. They use the Standells' "Dirty Water." They use everybody's songs, but they don't. But they don't have their own song. So I said, "Well, let me see if I can do something." You know, I talked to my friend in Boston, and he said, "Look, Freddie, if you do something, I'll bring it to the Red Sox management and see what they think." So I said, okay. So I said, I'll write something to Palisades Park, and I'll take the song, and I'll write some lyrics to that, and I'll go to the studio, and I'll cut it. Well, that's what I did. So I went there, and I did that, and I sent it back to Boston, and he brought it to the management of the Red, and they loved it. Now my friend in New York City said, "Freddie, you got to clear this with the writer because he wrote the lyrics."
Yep.
The writer is Chuck Barris of the Gong Show.
Right.
Oh my goodness!
Now Chuck Barris is a little cuckoo, you know.
Oh yeah.
A lot cuckoo.
A lot cuckoo, right? So I said, "Okay." So I get an email from Chuck Barris, and it's coming in, and I'm looking at this email. And the email says, "If you change my lyrics, I'll take you to court and I'll sue you." I'm cleaning it up. It was really dirty.
Yes.
So I'm really cleaning this up. Then I said, "Oh, now what am I going to do?" I said, "Okay." So I go to Plan B. Plan B was to take where the action is,
you know,
and write lyrics to that. I said, "Okay." So I'll do that. I said, "Before I go to the studio, I better check with the writers."
Right.
Now, the writers are Tommy Boyce, who wrote all the Monkey songs.
Yeah.
And he's dead. He's not around anymore.
Right.
But there's another writer, Steve Vinay, who wrote the other half.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to call him to clear it. Well, I find him in San Bernardino Mountains, and I keep calling, can't get a hold of him. Next thing I know, EMI Publishing calls me and says, "We're going to get an email from Steve Vinay, and I'll call you tomorrow, which was the next day. They call the next day. Steve Vinay says to them, "Do not let Freddie change the lyrics. We don't want him to do the song."
Oh, no.
This is a true story. So now my wife says to me, Jeanette, she says, "You know, all this time you've been doing this, you wrote Tallahassee Lassie.
Yeah.
You wrote some of your songs. Why can't you write a fresh new song?" So what I did was I took the intro of Palisades Park, I took the chord changes of where the action is, and I wrote a new melody, and that's what you got.
Wow.
Playing, and the Red Sox love it, so
it's great.
It worked out better for me. You
that's
know?
It's an amazing story, and people think it's easy to write a song. Huh?
Oh, it's not easy at all.
it's not easy. We're chatting with Freddie Boom Boom Cannon, and let's talk about where the boom boom came from.
Well, it came from people like yourself, Ray and Heather. Really, the disc jockeys in Boston when I first started, you know, I was a local kid. I think I was the first really rock and roll artist to come out of Boston you know, with a real rock and roll beat like that. So they, you know, they latched on to me and gave me nicknames. And the nicknames started like this. They used to say, Freddie Cannon, shot from guns, Peter Gunn's daddy, Freddie Cannon, and then Freddie Boom Boom Cannon, that's the one that stuck.
That's the one that stuck, yeah. That's the best one.
But thanks to people like yourself, and, you know, I wouldn't be around if it wasn't for you people, really.
No.
I mean that.
I'll tell you what, we both Heather and I were looking at some of your background and going back to how it all started, and of course we know that your dad was a... part of this because he was a musician himself.
Yes, he played the trumpet. He had his own band, and he was so proud because his band was the first band to back the Andrews Sisters in the 1940s. He used to tell this story all the time. He was so excited to back them up. They came to Lynn, Massachusetts at the Rialto Theater, and he just went. He just loved that, you know.
People think about Freddie Cannon. Sometimes they think of Arnie Woo-Woo Ginsburg.
Right.
They think of some of the great stuff that came out of Boston. But how important to your career was Bob Crewe?
Bob Crewe probably was the, I think, the secret ingredient to all my songs and records. You know, he just had, he knew what gimmicks and what things would work. You don't forget, Bob Crewe, I was writing with Bob Gaudio later on for the Four Seasons. So he knew how to get different things. He wrote so many songs and produced so many big records. I mean, you can go down the line. I mean, all the Mitch Ryder records and, wow, I mean, I just can't even think of them all. And then he had his own records. He just was a genius when it came to figuring out how to get, you know, the records that I had Woos on there, you know, the Woo that I put on some of these records. It was up to him that if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't been doing that, because he said to me, can you scream, Freddie? And I would try all different screams, and when I did the Woo, he said, that's the one, let's keep it. And I kept doing that on different records.
Do you still do it?
I can still do it, yeah, but too early in the morning.
I was going to say, can you
we'll wake up the neighborhood?
We don't want to do that. No, we don't want to wake up the wife or anybody. No.
Right. Then I want to ask you guys a question. How close are you to Rutland, Vermont?
About 45 minutes.
Yes.
You know, I was in the National Guard at Camp Drum, New York.
No kidding.
Oh my!
And that's not far from you, is it?
No, it's not far at all.
Yeah, I did.
So, did you ever get to Rutland?
I think so. I'm not sure. No, we're going way back. You know, I'm going back to. Like 16 years old, I was in the National Guard. My mom signed me in.
16?
In Lynn, Massachusetts, the 101st Engineers. And we used to go to Camp Drum and do the two weeks of bivouac.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there's people listening to the show. They'll be, you know, they'll get a good laugh out of this one, you know.
I'll tell you somebody who was definitely listening to the show, and she came in here last week. We were talking about, hey, we're going to have Freddie Cannon on the air. So she came in to confirm it. And we told her, indeed, we were going to have you with us this morning, and she's such a huge fan of yours.
Oh.
And her name is Mary Kay Taylor. Now, I know that before we went on the air, Heather told you a little secret about Mary Kay.
Yes, it's Mary Kay's birthday today, right?
Next Monday.
Next Monday, yeah. Okay, all right.
So we wanted to get Freddie Cannon to wish Mary Kay a happy birthday.
You think she would call in at all, you think, Ray?
She just did.
She just did,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
all right. Well,
she was
Mary
in Massachusetts.
Okay, Mary, if y'all listening, you know, we love you, and I wish you the best and the biggest birthday of all. Right from my heart, I wish you the best. And I know the radio station wishes you the best, Heather and Ray. So God bless you, and you take care. Keep listening. You know, you're a real rock and roller.
That's wonderful.
That's
now
beautiful.
She owes both Heather and I big time. That's nice.
That's good.
Take us through the career a little bit. You leave the Boston area.
Yeah.
You get... Not, I don't mean this in a negative way, but you get wrapped up, tied up with Dick Clark, which obviously was a big blessing to your career.
Well, you know what, Tallahassee Lassie, first, when I wrote that, my mom wrote a poem. This is how that song started.
Yeah.
She wrote this little poem, and from that I put the music to the poem. I do the melody. And then I went into Boston, and I cut it with the band that I had back then. And then I gave it to Arnie Ginsberg on a cassette, actually it was a reel-to-reel, no cassette, it was a reel-to-reel on a Revere tape recorder. Well, actually, Bob Crewe and Frank Slay used to come through different cities, and they would bring their records in for people to test them and play. Well, he gave them this reel-to-reel, they took it back to New York, and one thing led to another. But what happened was, that this music, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen. I was 19 years old back then. You know, I was like every other person who wanted to get in the music business. I just got lucky and, you know, met the right people at the right time. Because it's a chain of reaction that happens in this business, you know. So to follow that to happen, then they flew me to New York City and I cut the song over again. And then they took this song to Dick Clark, and Dick Clark listened to the song. It didn't have the break in there with that big bass drums going on, mm-hmm. you know, and I said romping to the drag and all that stuff in mm-hmm. there. It didn't have that. So they played this song for him, and they went to his house and they had dinner. This is what they would used to do. They would play because they wanted to test to see if they really had something. So they play this, and he said, if he liked something, I'm sorry, I don't mean to keep on going over and over it, but if he liked a song or a record, he would say, play that again, I want to hear it one more time. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what he did with Tallahassee. And the second time he said to them, if you put a drum in here, playing like a real big drum banging, you know, in here in this break, he said, I think you got a hit. So that's what they did. They went into the studio and they overdubbed. Bob Crew did. He took a mallet and he went into with a bass drum. and he hit it with a mallet and he kept hitting this thing and you know, there's the sound of Tallahassee, and he was right. And so then when the record was finished, Swan Records picked it up, and when Dick heard the record, he knew that's what he had said. It became the dance contest, and you know, the rest is history. I mean, it was one after another. I got just really lucky, and I'm thankful actually to my mom, because she's not with us anymore. But you know, if it wasn't for her, for her idea of a lyric, you know, to try to write, to say, Freddie, try to write some music to this, to these words, and I did, and that's what happened.
Wow. That's what happened. So it's always interesting to hear some of these stories behind the music. We're chatting with Freddie Cannon, who was kind enough to get up at a ridiculous hour in the morning to chat with us. You know, your association with Dick Clark, long-lasting, and I think you hold the record for most appearances on Bandstand.
Yes, 110 times, Ray.
Really?
That's a lot of times.
110.
What was that like?
Oh, that was great. Well, you know, a lot of times out of the 110 times Heather was, I was like the... you know what would happen? I lived in Philadelphia for 2 years. Now, during that time, that's when most of the Bandstand shots that I did from what, because I was living there.
Yeah.
Well, what happened was an artist couldn't get in, make a plane, or miss the show, or do something. I'd get the call because I was right there. So
there you go.
And I would drive over to Bandstand. And I would repeat, you know, some of the songs that I already had out. And I would do them over again. You know, and to fill in. You know, and that was beautiful because of the exposure. You know, you can't buy that exposure. So I just, you know, did it and was really happy. Now I can talk about it. You know, it's just great.
And then you also did a little bit of work on the other show that Dick was associated with, Where the Action Is.
Yeah, I just appeared on that. But, you know, I did the theme song.
The theme song, exactly.
Yeah, theme song. And, you know, the song was submitted, you know, when it came to Dick Clark, was from Tommy Boyce and Stephen A. What happened was that they gave the song to Paul Revere and the Raiders because they were the host of the show,
right.
And they thought that they could cut it, so they did cut it. When they played it for Dick, he didn't like it. It was like, I don't know.
He did not say play it again.
No, I didn't, right. He didn't like the version, I guess it was, you know, and I never heard the version. So what they did is they sent it over to Del Shannon, who had Runaway. Del turned it down. He didn't want to do it for reasons I don't know. And, you know, I'll never ask him because he's not around
he's no
anymore
longer
either.
With us either, yeah.
Right. So Dick must have thought, because I'm just thinking of what he's saying in his head. He must have thought, well, this is a Freddie Cannon record. You know, this is certainly his style. So he sent it over to Warner Brothers at that time because that's when I was signed to Warner Brothers. And Dick Glasser called me, a producer, and he said, Freddie, then I had left Frank Slay and Bob Crew. And he said, Freddie, he says, come on over to the studio. I got a song that for Dick Clark has a new television show, and he wants you to try to sing it. Well, I went to the office at Warner Brothers, and he played this demo. And when he played the demo, I said to Dick, play this one more time, Dick. And I started to sing it. He said, let's go to the studio. He knew right away that I could sing. The minute I heard it the second time, I was singing the thing. So he said, let's go to the studio. And that's what happened.
I'll tell you what, you had some great musicians on that song. I mean,
oh, yeah.
You had Hal Blaine, Leon Russell, JB, Glenn Campbell, David Gates.
All on that record.
Wow.
Yeah, all superstars.
That's
a
who's who of session men.
Yeah. Right, and they used to do all those sessions, you know, but those guys were doing things way back when. If you go back before they became stars, they were playing everybody's records. I can't even imagine.
Hal Blaine, yeah.
Yeah, they did virtually all of Gary Lewis's.
All of Gary Lewis.
I know Hal Blaine played on virtually all the Beach Boys stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, so now we know he also played on Freddie Cannon. So
right, and they just, you know, they were like, you would laugh. I mean, it was so funny. I mean, to go in the studio, Studio B, United Studios in Hollywood, you'd go in there, and when I cut action, it would take them, and they make a lot of money. They would take not less than 30 minutes. They'd cut the track, then they'd pick up all their stuff, move to Studio A, go in there. Another 10 minutes, do another stint, come back to studio. They were doing this back and forth. I couldn't believe it because they were so good. You didn't have to, once they hear the song, they could play it.
Boy, things have changed, huh?
Yeah.
That brings up a great question. Obviously, you were around and you were big in the time when we're talking the doo-wop music and the early rock and roll sound of the 50s and early 60s. We all went through the British invasion, the psychedelic era. Take us back, Freddie, if you will, for a moment, and compare what it was like in the 50s and 60s to what it is today.
Well, that's a great question you just threw at me. Back then, there were so many big artists back then. I mean, you know, from Elvis Presley, who was the king and everything, from that, from, you know, to the Chuck Berry, who to me, the Chuck Berry is my idol. If I did, when I watched him in Boston Gardens, a live show in 1956, I said to myself, and I was dating my wife, and we went to see this show, and I said, you know, this is what I want to do. To myself, I'm saying this.
Mm-hmm.
If this guy's up on the stage can go crazy, make this house go crazy. I mean, this place was packed, and he was, like, doing the duck walk and dancing. I couldn't believe what I was seeing, and I knew that's what I wanted to do. But, you know, to have Elvis Presley and then Chuck Berry and Bo Diddley and Jerry Lee Lewis and all these Fats Domino and all these superstars, Little Richard, you saw, you know, that's the roots of this music. I mean, when you now you jump to today, I mean, some of it is, I don't want to be facetious or anything, you know, but, you know, I don't listen to rap music. It's not, you know, I don't want to say I don't like it or anything, but
I don't.
You know, well, you know, the music, you know, I think the music from those days that we're talking about back then is easy to remember and easy to listen to and easy to sing along with. It's very catchy. Today it's hard. I don't know if anybody's going to remember a song that they're playing on the radio. You know, can you remember them 5 years from now?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think so.
That's,
you know,
a great question.
Yeah,
a great question.
See, so I don't know. You know, melody wise. And that's why the good songs stick around, you know.
Yes,
so
they do.
Yeah, so it's not offensive any, because there are some great artists out here today. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are some great ones, and they can sing, and they play great guitars and drummers, and they really are. So that's no offense to them, and those people making terrific records. But there are the other ones, and we had them in our time, too. We had some artists that weren't that so good, you know, but I think the majority of this, what I'm talking about, is the roots of the music will always be there. If it wasn't for that, you wouldn't have anything today. There wouldn't be any of this music today if it wasn't for the roots back then from the 1955s on up, you know.
That is so
well said. Yes.
And young kids today should adhere to that.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
I mentioned the Beatles and was chatting with Freddie Cannon. What was the British invasion like to you as a performer, to you and the Paul Ankas and the Bobby Rydells and the Avalons and the Presleys? What did it feel like to have that wave come over you?
Well, that was a big wave, I'm telling you. Terrific wave. Anyway, what happened was, you know, I have Where the Action. It actually, before Action, I had Abigail Beecher, our history teacher, that novelty record.
We just played that one this morning.
Oh, thank you. I had that at Warner Brothers, and that's when the Beatles first hit. Now, they didn't first hit there, but they had like five or six big hits during that 1964 era,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I couldn't even get into the top 10. Abigail Beecher got like number 12. It was blocking everything up there. They had everything they put out at that beginning you know, seemed to jump right into the top 10 records, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But to jump back a little bit, in 1962, I was in England, and I was doing this rock and roll movie, and so the owner of Swan Records and his wife came with me to England, and so I was doing a live show at a big theater, and also this movie. I was doing, like, singing in this movie. So we were staying at the Stratford Court Hotel in downtown London, and kids, and there was other artists there also, and kids would, you know, hang around the lobby of the hotel. And what happened was, Bernie Benek, who owned Swan, one morning went down for breakfast, and there's all these kids, because they still wanted to try to get autographs every day of myself and whoever else was in the hotel. And this little girl come up and said, "Do you know where so-and-so is, and can you get me autographs of blah," who was asking different questions. And he opened up the autograph book, and the back of the autograph book was a picture of a Beatle. And around the Beatle had John Paul, had all their names. Okay, this is 62.
Wow.
So the little girl, he said, "What's this?" She said, "Oh, this is a band. They play up in Liverpool. You should see them. They're really good."
Oh, my goodness.
Now, this is 62.
Yeah.
So, for some reason, I don't know, I had nothing to do with this, but I'm just telling you what happened while I was there. For some reason, him and his wife hopped on a train. They went to Liverpool. Oh. Now, this is Swan Records. Wow. They went to Liverpool, and they met, I can't remember the manager's name.
Brian Epstein.
Brian Epstein.
Yeah.
And Brian Epstein had lunch with them or something and said, "I have a demo record of this group." That was the Beatles. He said, "We take it back to you with the United States and listen to this." Now, this is way before they were even going to, you know, because She Loves You, which is this, was the, really their first record.
Yeah.
The P.S. I Love You was, they say, was the first, but it wasn't. In America, it was She Loves You, and it was on Swan Records. He took the record and brought it and pressed it and everything, took it back with him, right? He brought it to Dick Clark. Dick said, "I don't like it." He said, "It sounds like the Everly Brothers." He wouldn't play it.
Wow.
Yeah. So he put it out, and they put it out, and it did a little bit, and didn't do really great.
Matter of fact, they put it out in 1963. Next week in history, it was. It's how close we're talking here.
I'm figuring you know your history better than I do. Yeah,
any guy who knows every song Freddie Cannon ever recorded knows his history.
but you know, this is a true story, and you know, a lot of people don't know this. So Bernie had good ears. It was Bernie Benek, mm-hmm. and he knew that there's something in this record of these kids, you know. And evidently, this is what happened. I mean, I wasn't there. I still was in London. And then they came back, and they had the record in the bag. And I know that he went over to Dick's office and bandstand, and Dick didn't want to play it. Now, he would have been the first one to play the Beatles.
Yeah.
But he didn't like it because he thought it sounded too much like, you know, an American record like the Everly Brothers or whatever. So he wouldn't play it. And it wasn't no offense to the Beatles. He just didn't think it was there, you know.
Wow.
But all the time, there it was. That was a number one record also, you
yeah.
know.
Oh, yeah.
So they you know, they were like, I don't know how to explain it. It's just they wrote great songs, you know, and there again, I gotta commend both of them, Paul McCartney, John Lennon, and they don't need to be commended by me because they've reached their peak. But we're talking about melody of songs. These guys wrote some terrific melodies, and great songs, you know. So you can't take that away from those people, you know.
In the short time we got, Freddie, and I could talk to you for 2 hours.
I'm okay. I'm fine. Great.
One of the things we've been talking about today, obviously, is the 6th anniversary of 9/11.
Mm-hmm. And right, it is today, right?
It is today. And yep. Do you recall where you were?
I think I was. I think I was doing a show outside of New York, either New Jersey or New York City, somewhere outside of New York. I was
very
doing
nice.
A show there. I think it was New Jersey, but you know, I was way up, way away from the area that I couldn't. If you said, "Well, did you see the smoke or did you see anything?"
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember seeing anything. I don't think I. And actually, it was at night. I had flown in and to do a show. So if it already had happened, I probably watched it on the news like everybody else. You
know? A horrible day.
Yeah, it was a horrible day. It really was, yeah. I mean, so many people, so innocent people. losing their lives, you know. It's just sad.
And let me ask you a question. Do you have a website?
Yes, I do.
We ought to get that out.
Okay, just go to freddycannon.com, or let me say one more thing, Ray.
Sure.
I know you guys want to get to some more music and everything, but the thing is that the down at Fenway Park, the Red Sox song, I've neglected to say that, they can buy this at Newbury Comics stores. Now, I don't know if there's any up in...
There's one up in West Lebanon, New Hampshire, 30 minutes north of here.
Okay, they can buy that. I'll go on the Newbury Comics website, and it'll take them to buy it online, whatever they want. But the most important thing, before you let me go, is that a portion and almost all of this money from this CD, and if they buy it, you're making me feel so great, it goes to the Jimmy Fund, which is the Red Sox Foundation.
God bless you for that.
Wonderful.
So that's the whole key is for the little kids who get cancer. And, you know, I choke up when I talk about that.
It's an amazing story. And, I mean, I grew up in New England, and I was a Red Sox fan since I was 7. And
right.
I'm not that much younger than you, believe me. So I remember, you know, the Ted Williams involvement with it and all of that.
Right,
so, no,
right.
It is a very great cause.
It is. And I'm glad to do that. You know, the minute they said, well, would you want to do that? I said, are you kidding me? I said, let's go.
I just want to say something to you, sir. When I first talked to you on the phone and said, would you like to come on? You sounded somewhat surprised that somebody who would run an oldies station would really remember Freddie Cannon. You sounded somewhat surprised that people who listen to the station might remember a Freddie Cannon. And I got to tell you, I don't know about anywhere else, but here in New England, you are a living legend.
Yes.
And for you to think that you don't deserve to be included in that group of greats that you mentioned earlier, you're wrong. You're a great man, and it has been an honor. It's been our honor to talk with you, because it isn't very often that you get to chat with somebody whose music was such a vital, important part of my and Heather's teenage years and our growing up years.
Well, you make me cry now. Don't do that.
It's just an amazing thing to talk to you. Now, I know you've written songs, and I've also written a song, and I need your help.
Okay.
It's actually just 4 syllables. Now, every time Heather does the weather, I've written this song called Heather Weather. And it goes something like this. It goes, Heather Weather. So do you think at the count of 3, this would make her day, we could sing Heather Weather together?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, you ready, buddy?
Ready?
1, 2, 3. Heather Weather. Don't run off. Go ahead.
Fantastic. The WCFR Heather Weather Center forecast is calling for morning showers followed by afternoon thunderstorms, highs near 70. Showers this evening followed by partly cloudy skies overnight with lows near 50. A mix of sun and clouds for Wednesday, but windy with high temperatures in the low 70s. And on Thursday, it's going to be sunny but cooler with highs in the mid-60s. Looking ahead to Friday, mostly sunny skies with highs in the mid-70s. It's now 8:57 in the morning on a Tuesday morning, and the temperature at the bus stop, 62 degrees. That's the latest forecast from WCFR, Real Oldies 1480.
Freddie, I know you probably want to get your day started. You're almost up to 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I'm going to have some coffee and get going. You know what? I can't say thank you guys enough.
Thank you so much.
Anytime you want to come back on this show, man, you have a free pass.
That's great.
Okay, buddy?
Thank you,
Freddie. That's great.
I'll be in touch, and you take care of yourself.
Thank you, guys. So
right. Thanks, Freddie.
Bye-bye.
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 That is Freddie Boom Boom Cannon, and you know, we couldn't do any better than to close out the show with this. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.